This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to This Week in Travel, the show that talks to some of the most interesting and notable travelers in the world, as well as providing useful tips and actionable information. Now, here are your hosts, Gary Arndt, Chris Christensen, and Jen Leo.
Hello, everybody. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler, and welcome to This Week in Travel. Gary is not with us today. He is off on a tour in Chicago, but we do have the lovely Jen Leo. Say hello, Jen.
Hey, everybody. Hi from Carlsbad, California.
And this is going to be a little shorter episode because we only have our guest here for about half an hour. So we're going to skip over the news and introduce you to Teddy Wilson from Discovery Canada and Smithsonian Mighty Trains. Teddy, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
So you are going to be, I say, the show is about to premiere on TV here in Canada this week.
Second season, right?
Yeah.
So season two premieres in Canada on Discovery on October 14th. We've got six great one-hour episodes highlighting some of the most incredible trains and train journeys in the world. And then in the States, as you say, we air on Smithsonian. And so you can look forward in the future down there in the States as well.
Excellent.
Teddy, are you allowed to tell us what destinations you're going to cover in the new season?
Oh yeah, I mean, we kick off the season in our backyard up here in Canada on a train called Rocky Mountaineer, which goes Canadian Rockies through BC and Alberta. It's a train that you guys and a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with. It's absolutely beautiful. And then from there we go to Ecuador to ride a train called Tren Crucero, which is known as the train to the clouds. It goes from sea level Guayaquil up to Quito, the second highest political capital in the world. And then we in season three, we go to India on the Maharajas Express, which has been voted the number one luxury train on earth. It runs between Delhi and Mumbai. And from there, we go to Spain to highlight some high-speed rail, the AVE 103. We cross both islands of New Zealand on two of Kiwi Rail's epic train adventures. And then in our last episode, we're actually in Sweden on a working train, a giant freight train that carries thousands of tons of timber from the Swedish forest down to these pulp and paper mills. So we really do touch every corner of the globe and every type of train in this season.
Well, and the last train you talked about there, that didn't seem like as obvious a choice as, you know, Rocky Mountaineer, amazing trip. Is that a passenger train then also, or...
No, that's a freight train.
Train.
So yeah, and back in our first season, we did a train in Norway that carried fish from the Norwegian Arctic down to Oslo. And in this season, we're on a timber train. So we try to cover all sorts of different trains on the show.
Interesting. So five of the six you're covering this season, people can actually book a ticket on.
Correct.
They have to become a lumberjack to book a ticket on the sixth one.
become a timber worker in Sweden and you might get a ride on the last one.
That seems a little more difficult.
Yeah.
So did the travel journalism come first or the love for trains come first?
Both. I'm a lifelong fan of travel. Traveling is my favorite thing to do. I got bitten by the bug when I was very young, the travel bug. And I'm also a lifelong fan of trains. You know, I'm not like an engineer or a train expert. I'm just an enthusiast. And so I love shooting this show. It's a real dream job for me. And, you know, in terms of the mechanics and the engineering and the design of the trains, we dive into that on the show too. So, you know, we're a travel show and we focus on these incredible landscapes and certainly the people who work on the trains and keep them running and keep these amazing train journeys happening. But then we also dive into some of the mechanics and the engineering. So in that respect, I'm kind of learning a lot along with the viewer in every episode. So I kind of bring viewers along, but I learn a lot too.
I actually am an engineer, but I've never driven a train. So
oh, wild.
Just not that kind of engineer.
Right.
Jenny, you started to ask.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask him to give our listeners a little bit of a recap of the show, but he kind of just did that. What I saw a little bit of a sneak peek, and what I was really impressed by is that you're not just talking about the view outside of the train. You're really talking about the people that make the train, the travel experience happen. So you're going underground and you're talking to, I mean, you're talking to everybody from people that are on the train to people that are building the tracks and making the tunnels.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we really try to kind of give a 360-degree view to the viewer of what's required to, you know, have these trains operate. And that includes the history of the rail lines and the tracks themselves. And every country we visit, we go into how these rail lines were built and some of the history behind it. We go into the, you know, the seemingly insurmountable challenges of operating train lines through areas like the Canadian Rockies, like through the Andes Mountains, like through the Thar Desert in the middle of India, because so many times the landscapes, the terrain, the natural phenomenon and natural disasters in a lot of these countries are constantly conspiring against the trains. So it's just amazing that some of these railways and trains exist in the first place. So we talk about that on the show as well. And as you say, we also highlight the people and the everyday heroes who work on these trains and, you know, people who work in track maintenance. We highlight the kind of eagle-eyed experts at the central train control who are constantly watching and monitoring all of these trains. And when you get to a country like India, you know, you're talking about, you know, thousands and thousands of trains. They have such a massive railway system. So we really try to show what it takes to operate these trains. We pull back the curtain. And in the process, you know, we're really granted some fantastic access to these trains and to these journeys. So, you know, my hope and our hope is that at the end of each episode, you feel like you've learned a lot about the specific journey, but also about what it takes to keep these trains running. And, you know, hopefully people feel like they get to know some of the people who work on the trains as well. And there are often unexpected challenges that come up, you know, while we're shooting the episode. For instance, in Ecuador, we actually had a working train derail a couple hours ahead of us. This is a train that goes ahead of our tourist train, just to make sure the tracks are clear, to make sure that everything is safe. You know, in Ecuador, for instance, there's a lot of brush growth. You know, the foliage there is massive. And so they even cut away brush to make sure everything's fine and monitor the track condition. And that working train derailed. So I won't spoil what happens. You got to check out the episode, but it's pretty epic. And like that sort of unexpected thing happens to us a lot as we're shooting. And wow. So we really take a lot of pride in highlighting the people who work for the trains, who overcome these challenges, and they really do kind of often become like the heroes of our episodes.
Well, and you mentioned that you deal with some of the engineering and the challenges there, and you mentioned the Rocky Mountaineer. So I'm assuming you're doing the route then from Vancouver up to the Canadian Rockies, including that tunnel that loops and basically does two complete turns, winding its way corkscrew up into the Canadian Rockies.
Yeah, we do. You know, they're called the spiral tunnels. And as you say, I mean, they're incredible. It's these spirals within a mountain, within two mountains, actually. And it's in an area of British Columbia called the Kicking Horse Pass. And the deal was, you know, that they had to make these ascents. But obviously, as you and a lot of your listeners will know, you know, a regular train can only go up grades of a couple of percent and down grades of a couple of percent, normal trains. And so, you know, in an area like that, you have a fairly short distance where you have to make some pretty big elevations that aren't really possible with those percentages. So the spiral tunnels were a way of achieving those elevations over geographically a fairly short distance, doing these spirals inside the tunnel. It's a real feat of engineering and kind of, you know, a marvel of train technology. And it's just one of the many examples of, you know, these real feats of engineering that were required in order to have trains go through this landscape, you know. And it's landscapes that, while certainly beautiful and while amazing to see, are pretty inhospitable and pretty harsh in terms of, you know, the ability to have a train running through them.
Yeah, I remember as a kid pulling over the overpass where you can see the train come out of the tunnel here and then watching later on when it comes out. And, you know, as a geeky kid, I thought that was just amazing.
So, as a geeky adult, I find it amazing.
Very cool.
Hey, Teddy, for the armchair traveler, the scenery is amazing. And you're getting shots of the trains from all different angles. Can you tell us a little bit about the photography that goes into this? Because I'm literally seeing shots from all sides of the train.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, you know, because it's, you know, I've been kicking around the TV business for a while. So even from a production perspective, you know, hosting the show, it's fascinating. We have a large crew that we travel with. And as you say, you know, we're capturing these trains from all different angles. We often have drone crews that we work with. They'll shoot stuff from helicopters. You know, in our season premiere episode on Rocky Mountaineer, I'm actually up in a helicopter with the train going below us and we're shooting footage of it. We often have, you know, crews that are stationed along the line in order to get these epic shots of the train going past. And so it not only takes a village to keep these trains and these trains journeys happening, but it kind of takes a village in order to put an episode of Mighty Trains together as well, because we really want to immerse viewers in these train journeys and show them from multiple perspectives. So it's kind of fascinating as a TV guy too, to get to see how our amazing crew puts these episodes together. I'm just one very, very small cog in a larger machine. But, you know, our hope is that when viewers see this, they really get a sense of how epic these journeys and these landscapes are.
And how much say do you get into, you know, which train journeys to choose? I assume some production choices are made there. But did you get to choose, for instance, Hey in India, instead of choosing the train where you know, the low-cost train, which has no air conditioning and there's no assigned seats, so people are literally jumping on the train as it pulls into the station and is still moving and throwing their children up to other people so they can get on. You said, no, let's do the luxury train, or was that just luck on your part?
Yeah, you know, it was just luck. And to be honest, you know, it was my first time in India, and I'd really love to go back and ride the types of trains that you're talking about, you know. But I also feel really fortunate to have gotten to ride the Maharaja's Express. It's been voted the number one luxury train in the world many years over. And I mean, there's a reason for that. This train is really, really luxurious. The attention to detail is absolutely mind-boggling. And so, yeah, it was to get to cross the country in that level of style, I was very lucky. But I'd love to go back and do the trains you're talking about as well. But the Maharaja's Express is, like, you know, it's an amazing machine. It's a point of pride as well for the folks who work on it. And it's a heck of a way to get to see the country. And, you know, a big part of that train journey for the passengers on board are these offboard excursions that they go on. And,
sure, yeah.
You know, for example, we visit a place called the Karni Mata Temple outside of a city called Bikaner. And the Karni Mata Temple is also known as the Rat Temple, because there are over 20,000 rats that call this temple home. So we take viewers along on one of these offboard excursions. And it's a holy place. It's a place of reverence, because the followers there believe that these rats are the reincarnated souls of a local family. So, you know, it's interesting, because you really feel that reverence, and you certainly want to honor that, but at the same time you have hundreds of rats running over your feet. So it was a very, very unique experience, to put it mildly, and it's just one of the excursions offboard the train that we also bring viewers along for, and it was a real thrill.
Very cool.
Hey Teddy, I don't know if you're a foodie or not, but of all the train experiences that you've had, which ones have served the best food?
It's a really great question. I'm a foodie in that I love to eat food. I'm not a very good cook at all.
But, right.
I've been very spoiled, and I got to say, especially this season, you know, and three of the trains I mentioned already, the Rocky Mountaineer, the Maharaja's Express in India, and Tren Crucero in Ecuador, like, have literally gourmet food. It is that kind of Michelin star restaurant quality food. And it's amazing that they can prepare this when they're in, you know, these usually fairly cramped kitchen galley spaces. And of course, the galley is actually moving, you know, like, even smooth trains rock and roll back and forth a little bit. So the kitchens are kind of optimally designed, both in terms of maximizing space, but then also, you know, from preventing plates and glasses from falling off the shelves and everything. So they put a lot of work into having systems to keep things from falling. And certainly the chefs and the workers on board are really fantastic at what they do. And the food that they put out to the passengers on the train is really, just as I said, like, absolutely gourmet. I've actually had some of the best meals of my life while shooting Mighty Trains, which is something that I got to say, when we started this, I knew on some of these trains the food would be fantastic, but I did not expect the quality that I've been really, really lucky to get to indulge in.
You know, it's interesting. If you go to one of the best train museums I know is the Train Museum in Sacramento.
Okay.
And they have some of the original train engines, for instance, from the Pacific forgetting the name of the train company, but you know, from the Pacific Rim, from the, we're up in the Sierras. These are the steam engines and things. But they have in one place a collection in a dining car of the different chinaware from the different train lines, because at the time before air travel was how everybody traveled, or at least how, you know, the rich and famous traveled, that was done on trains, of course, you know, back in the day. And so every train line had their own, you know, as well as chefs and wonderful preparation. I think that was maybe the heyday for that kind of thing. They also all had their own china pattern.
Oh, that is incredible. Wow.
So what are the passengers like? Are people going on these trains because they want to see the country, or are they going on the trains because they're absolute train geeks? What are you encountering in terms of, describe the passengers for us.
Yeah, you get a real mix demographically in terms of their you know, why they're on the train, as you say. You know, I think certainly for the longer trains, you know, that you either stay on, or in a case like Rocky Mountaineer, they're like multi-day journeys, usually 2-day journeys, but you stay off the train in a hotel. But I think for these longer journeys, you know, the train is very much the destination more so than a way of getting from A to B. It's actually how I feel about trains in general, even riding like single day trains. And, you know, in my personal life, I plan my vacations often around being able to take at least one train in the country. So for me, trains are really the destination. And you encounter a lot of people on these journeys who feel likewise. If it's a longer journey, like for instance, the Maharajas Express, or in our season one, we did the Canadian from Vancouver to Toronto, a 4-day journey. We did the GAN from Adelaide up to Darwin, which is a 4-day journey as well. And on those longer ones, you get some people who have been planning these trips for years, you know.
Right, sure.
Often you meet some retirees as well who have planned part of their retirement around it. And certainly younger people as well who are kind of interested in the notion of train travel as a way to really see a country, as opposed to just going to a city and then, you know, taking a regional flight to another one. I think there's something to be said for traversing the country. So you meet people like that. You also meet like fellow hardcore train fans as well. So it's really interesting. But generally, people are on board the trains, not necessarily as just a means of transportation, but as part of their trip or their whole trip in and of itself.
Well, and we should say, you mentioned two of the trains that you did in the first season. Let's name the rest of them, because it's going to lead up to a question I got for you. The other four trains would be the Shinkansen in Japan, the high-speed train, which I'm actually going to be on in about a month, the North Rail Express in Scandinavia, the Glacier Express in the Alps, and the White Pass in Yukon route, which is another just classic train route that is more ridden these days by cruise ship passengers probably than anybody else, but a gorgeous, gorgeous route. Of the 12 that you've done so far,
it's beautiful.
Last season, this season, what surprised you? Which one was the most unusual?
I actually, you know, I am really lucky with this job in that I'm constantly surprised and amazed, and it's tough to narrow down a favorite.
Well, I would have asked you a favorite, but that would have been harder.
It's tough. The White Pass and Yukon route really surprised me because, as you said, I mean, this is a train now that is dominantly taken by folks who are getting off cruise ships. Skagway, Alaska is a giant cruise ship port, often multiple giant cruise ships coming in there every day. And this is a day excursion for a lot of the people. You know, you can either spend the day in Skagway or you can take this train that really embodies and encapsulates the history of the Klondike Gold Rush in the Yukon and Alaska. So this is a train that really surprised me, because the journey as well is only, you know, it's a couple hours there and back. You do cross into Canada at a really small, fascinating customs post in Fraser, BC. It's got to be one of the smallest customs posts between America and Canada. It's a fascinating little place, but you know, I even wondered, like, oh, can we make an episode of this kind of short train journey? But it's turned out to be one of our most popular episodes, and certainly one of my favorite, because we, you know, more so than any other episode we've shot, it really took us back to the history, to the time and place of the gold rush. And it really kind of makes you feel transported. It's an old narrow gauge railway that kind of brings back that history and that romanticism. In our Ecuador episode, it's also a narrow gauge railway, and it had the same impact on me. So from season one, I think that would probably be the one that surprised me most. But, you know, even taking the Shinkansen in Japan, we do the original Tsukaido line between Tokyo and Osaka, which was the first bullet train that opened way back in 1964. And I was surprised in that episode by everything that has to go into a high-speed train, whether it's you know, the automated train control, their centralized train control system, which is really incredible, or, of course, in Japan, which is the most earthquake-prone country in the world, they've had to really think in a very creative and innovative way about what to do if there's earthquakes in the country while these high-speed trains are running, because it's a threat that they face every day. And I was surprised to learn that in the 2011 quake, the massive one that caused the deadly tsunami, that all of the bullet trains on the Shinkansen line were stopped around a minute before the earthquake hit. And that's the result of a very elaborate and very high-tech system of seismic sensors that could detect the earthquake before it actually hit. So that surprised me too. And I mean, I could go on and on. In Switzerland, you mentioned the Glacier Express. That's a train that ascends and descends at grades of up to 12%. Because of this cogwheel rack and pinion system they have. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I'm literally surprised on every episode. And that goes for season two as well. And we're actually partway into production on season three, which has been great. We've already shot a couple episodes. And I continue to be surprised and amazed.
Well, in Japan, one of the reasons it works to do the early warning system for the earthquakes is that you can send an electronic signal at the speed of light, or, you know, roughly those speeds. But the speed that is the earthquake travels is, as I recall, it's even closer than to the speed of sound. It's a wave that is coming in the ground. And so you can get that signal out in advance and get you some time if it's coming from a distance. If you're there near the epicenter, you got no time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But the technology is incredible. And so on that episode, we actually went into a lot of detail about that, because that's a challenge and a reality that they deal with.
Well, and you were talking about the history of the Yukon, White Pass and Yukon route. One little tidbit of history for you here for our American listeners is, as you come over this pass, you come down to Lake Bennett. And this is where the people who were in the gold rush would build their boats and then basically take the river basically up to the Yukon, up to where the gold rush was, running some really incredible rapids on the way. But that is also the site, just in terms of a little current history, where our current American president, Mr. Trump, his grandfather, Mr. Drumpf, made his money running a hotel and brothel in that particular region to the, you know, service. That may not have been the right term there. The Yukon pioneers and prospectors who were coming over the hill there.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's fascinating. So yeah, quite the history there.
Yeah, the hotel's not there. They actually moved the hotel further down the mountain, as I recall, later on after the gold rush, after they put in the train, which made that whole route a lot easier than climbing up the pass with your 1,000 pounds of provisions that they required you have before you entered the Yukon.
Wow, sure. That's fascinating.
So, excellent.
Well, I've got one more question, Teddy. Can I have time for one more question?
Of course, yeah.
I was just wondering, what early train travel experience sparked your love for this industry?
Oh, good question.
Well, yeah, I lived up in Toronto, Canada, and I still remember my first ride on a train when I was 4 or 5 years old. It was between Ottawa in Ontario, the capital up here, and Montreal in Quebec, a wonderful city. And I still remember that train ride vividly, and just being, you know, fascinated by seeing the train pull in. You know, VIA is our passenger service up here, our Amtrak equivalent. And I still remember as a boy seeing that for the first time. And, you know, I think there's something about trains that captures our imaginations. And I think the fact that children are so enamored with them kind of speaks to the fact that it's really something that's ingrained within us. You know, it's not something we learn as adults. There's something inherent about these machines that captures our imagination. And I think that's why so many adults love them too, is because it's something that we got interested in as kids. So I still remember that first train journey well. And And, you know, I go back to Ottawa, which is about a 4-hour drive, frequently to see family. And I, you know, there are discount regional airlines up here as well. And I never fly. I always take the train, even though it's much quicker to fly, obviously, because I just really love that 5-hour, 4.5-hour ride, wow, sitting, looking out the window. I don't get tired of it. You know, it's better than the best big screen television. And there's something about it that really captures my imagination. And I think a lot of folks feel the same way. And I got to say as well, you know, I'm a short guy. I'm like 5'6" on a good day. So leg room on planes is never really an issue for me. I'm fine. But I do appreciate that you got more room to stretch out on a train.
Well, and can get up and walk around at any time. They never turn on the passenger fasten your seatbelt sign there. Jen,
it's
do
great,
you have a train journey that you did as a kid? Turning the question back at you.
So we would take the train up to Oregon to see the grandparents when I was a kid. And I remember being so startled. So I had been to restaurants as a kid and I was familiar with that. But I was so surprised that when we went into the restaurant galley of the train for when it was dinner time, the dinner train, that we had to go sit with other people. So I think one time I was traveling by myself to see the grandparents, or maybe with my brother. And I remember being seated at this table where there were three other people that I didn't know. And that was new to me, right? So then you had to carry on the conversation, but they had to fill all the seats. So I just remembered that. But then in my college days, I always took the train home, and that was an Amtrak train from Los Angeles Union Station down to San Diego. And I was always taking the one at sunset. So really beautiful to see the sunset over the Pacific.
Well, that goes along the coast too,
So you get to see the ocean a lot. And yeah, so those are a few positive train experiences I've had.
For me, it would be also to go to see the grandparents, but my grandparents were in Colorado, and I grew up in California, so it was the Feather River route on the Union Pacific, which I believe they still run that route, and it's a gorgeous route, especially as it goes through the Sierras. Now, as it gets into Nevada, it gets a little more boring, but just a really fascinating route there, and I'd say one of the classic routes in terms of U.S., in terms of train routes. Although at the end of the route, we ended up missing a connecting train for some reason. And I remember that we somehow ended up on the milk train.
What was that?
The milk train was a train that they used to deliver milk, as far as I could tell. And the whole thing smelled of sour milk.
Wow, that's where the term milk run comes up,
I
right?
Guess,
where it stops
apparently
at every
so.
Stop. Yeah, that's funny.
Oh my gosh.
So anyway, and two of the more memorable ones I've taken recently would be the night train in India and the night train in China. But not like the ones you took. I didn't take the real cheap one in India. I took the one with the air conditioning, but still, you know, 60 people in a sleeper car. And the chai vendor coming through periodically. So pretty interesting experience.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Excellent. Well, Teddy, we know that your timing is tight here, so we're probably going to wrap this up. Any final words for us before we go?
Or a tip? Well, a tip?
Or a train travel tip?
My travel tip is to take trains. That's definitely my travel tip. But I really hope people enjoy watching the season as much as we loved filming it. You know, I feel really lucky to have this gig, and it's a real pleasure to be able to bring viewers along on these journeys. And as I said, I mean, we're already in production on season 3. So if you like what you saw in season 1 or you like what you see in season 2, there will be more episodes in the pipeline. We've already been to Norway and Italy. We're leaving shortly to go to Australia, and then a couple of other amazing train journeys in different countries after that. And I should mention as well, if folks at home are listening to this before our season premiere in Canada on Sunday, October 14th, regardless of where you are, we're actually going to be doing a Facebook Live after show. So that'll be at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, October 14th, and you can watch that from any streaming.
Hello?
The first episode as well on Facebook, so you can catch us on our after show.
Excellent. And our guest again is Teddy Wilson, and we mentioned your Discovery Canada, and that date, you don't yet have a date for the Smithsonian Mighty Trains when that comes to the U.S., but it's sometime this fall here of 2018.
Yeah, it'll be rolling out in the near future. I'm not sure if it'll be in fall 2018, but you just kind of check your local listings and it'll be coming to you for sure. And Smithsonian's great about posting about it on their website as well. So, yeah, I really hope you like it.
Excellent. You can see episodes, I think, on the Discovery Canada show, and I think it also leads you to some YouTube sneak peeks and other videos.
Great. Yeah, there's lots of videos up on YouTube. We're always posting sneak peeks. So, yeah, pop online and see what you can find, and I hope you like watching it.
Excellent.
Thank you, Teddy.
And
thanks
everybody for tuning us into the podcast. We hope Gary's having a good tour, and get out there and travel and take a train.